We're starting a new series today on what are often known as the seven deadly sins, or another term is the seven capital vices. And so I want to introduce this idea just a little bit, why we're talking about these, what these are, and why we're even talking about them. So first of all, the name seven deadly sins isn't probably the best one. Better term is probably seven deadly or the seven capital vices. And a vice is not a term we use very often, but there's a difference between a vice and a sin. A sin we can think of as it's a pattern of living for us. It can be a condition we're in, or a sin can be an event, whereas a vice is maybe what we think of as a corruptive and destructive habit or pattern. A corruptive and destructive habit or pattern. So a vice is a way of living, and habits form over time. They form based on lots of things. And one way to think of a habit or a pattern or a vice is, think back to wintertime. I know some of you are trying to forget wintertime as much as you can, but in wintertime, think of old-fashioned sledding, or even with the toboggans and sleds, and you're getting ready to go down a hill. And one writer said this was a great picture, an illustration of what a habit or pattern is in our life. The first time you go down a sledding hill, it's a little bit hard, right? A little bit difficult, you're kind of plowing through the snow. And over time, what happens? You kind of make a track, and you start following that track. And it comes easier and easier to go down the track. And that's what a pattern or a habit it does in our life, or a vice. It makes it easy to go down that way. And then if you're sledding, how hard is it to get outside that track? It gets harder, doesn't it? Because you've got that worn in, or you think of a two-track road, or you're driving down the road and those kind of ruts are developed in the snow and trying to move on. And that's the idea of a vice or a habit or pattern. It becomes a way of living, and it becomes easy to go down that road, becomes easy to live that way, but it becomes hard to break it. And so a vice is a particularly destructive habit or pattern. And so we have virtues, which are the good way of living, but vices are ways that lead us into things. And so over time, hundreds of years ago, there was a man who went out in the desert and he began thinking about, what does it look like to follow Jesus? And he started thinking about that and developed, and he came back with this list of seven demons or seven habits or patterns. And over time, they were kind of debated and came down to these basic seven that are listed. They're listed in your bulletin there. And what these were kind of these idea. These were the ways we do that. And ways of living, these ways of pattern. And we said, well, why should we even study these? Why study these? Because they help us understand ourselves in the world. Because these patterns of living can help us understand why we do the things we do. They diagnose our struggles and they aid in this way of living right. And they can help us understand the world around us. They can help us understand why do things happen the way they do. So writers over time went back and they looked and said, here are these kind of seven key things, these seven key patterns of living that people tend to fall into. And out of these come all sorts of other things. Now there's nowhere in the Bible you can go and say, oh, here are the seven vices, the seven capital vices or the seven deadly sins listed out. And some of you might look at some of those, and if you look at the list of seven and think like sloth or gluttony, it's like, well, there are certainly worse things than that, right? And it's not that these are necessarily the worst, but what they found is these become kind of root patterns. It's out of these seven that most other sins happen. That as these things happen in our lives, that we begin to develop other things out of them. And so each week we'll be looking at one of these capital vices or one of these deadly sins and how it takes place. And then some of the sins that come out of that. But we want to do more than just talk about how bad we are. I mean, nobody wants to come to church to do that, right? Just to learn how bad you are. And we not only want to diagnose it, but we want to begin to say, what do we do to overcome it? So we're going to do a couple things. We're going to look at first what the sin is for the week. And then we're going to say, how do we diagnose it in our life? How do we determine, is that something that goes on in our life? What sort of things result from it? But then how do we begin to root it out? And so as we think about springtime and weeds, if you just pull a weed, if you just cut a weed off at the top, do you take care of the weed? No. What do you got to do? You got to get down to the root. And that's in some sense what these capital vices, what these deadly sins are. They're the root problems behind a lot of other things. And so today we're going to be talking about the one called envy. And a simple way to think of envy is sorrow at another's good. And so we see the term envy show up several different times in the Bible in these lists of sins that go on. And so what is envy? Envy is a desire for something mixed with resentment that the other is enjoying it and you are not. In other words, you see something somebody else has, and you feel like that somehow diminishes it. Dorothy Sayers says it this way. Envy begins by asking plausibly, why should I not enjoy what others enjoy? And it ends by demanding, why should others enjoy what I may not? You know, so we look at somebody's paycheck, we look at their free time, their successes, their love of life, and envy says, the life you have is worthless. Do whatever it takes to escape this. And so envy rejects the good life we have and looks at others. And so one way to think of it is the three words of envy are, why not me? And so we're going to take a look, and this is kind of the big abstract where we'll kind of narrow it down and say, but words of envy are, why not me? And so there's other words that we often use that are related to that. So sometimes people speak of the word jealousy or covetousness, and words are a funny thing. Because the meaning of words change over time, and the way we use words change over time. So the word awful, if I were to say the word awful, what do you think? It's something that's bad, right? Well, the word awful originally meant something that was filled with awe, something that was supposed to inspire awe. Same the word terrible. Terrible used to mean something that inspired terror, so you look at a dragon or a beast and you say, that dragon is terrible. And now we use the word terrible to talk about the dinner we had last night or the food we said. Or the word nice. Most of us now wouldn't mind being called nice, right?
Uh-huh.
Nice used to mean silly or stupid. And so now when you call someone nice, you can say, well, you're so nice. And you can use it however you choose to mean it, right? But the reality of the way language is a funny thing because the words shift in meaning over time, or the word unique is another one. Unique mean just now just kind of means it's special or kind of, unique used to mean one of a kind. But we shape and use words. And so there's a couple other words that are similar to envy, and I want to distinguish between those. So one of those words is jealousy. And so sometimes people say, oh, I'm so jealous. Jealousy, in its technical sense, jealousy refers to when I possess something, and I'm going to use scare quotes around the word possess. When I possess something and I love it and I want to guard and protect it. So I'm married, I have a wife, and if somebody's trying to attract my wife, if there's another guy, get my wife, I become jealous. That means I become protective of what I already have. And so sometimes we use the word jealous to refer to something somebody else has. Oh, so I'm so jealous of that. It's not really what jealous means. Jealous really means something I already have and that I'm protective of. Covetous is a similar word to envy. Covetous means somebody has something I want. So you see somebody driving down the road and they've got the new car that you've been looking after and you want that. You're not jealous of their car. You covet their car. You want their car. How is that different from envy? Envy is the kind of thing where you see it and you want it, but if you can't have it, you don't want the other person to have it either. You are angry at the other person for having something. So envy is this feeling towards another person for having some sort of benefit that you're desiring. And so to illustrate this, I'm going to tell a couple stories. A couple from the Bible and then a couple from movies and a modern day. So early in the Bible, in the fourth chapter, there's a story of two brothers, Cain and Abel. And these two brothers go and they offer a sacrifice before God. And God accepts Abel's sacrifice, but he rejects Cain's sacrifice. And so the scripture goes on in Genesis chapter 4, and it says that God looked at Cain's sacrifice, or Abel's sacrifice, and he took it. He says, then the Lord said to Cain, he says, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door and desires to have you, but you must rule over it. And then Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. So let's set the story. So two men go to sacrifice. God accepts one sacrifice, not the other. And so the response of Cain is what? Why did Abel get this? That's not fair. He got something that I deserved. He got something that I should have. And out of that, he decides to murder his brother. And so the root sin is envy, is this thing seeing what Abel had gotten, this thing that Abel had received. And what did Abel receive? God's blessing. God's acceptance. And Cain can't stand that he has it. God tells him, he says, well, if you do what's right, you can have it too. But Cain chooses something else. He chooses to let envy take root, and out of that envy grows bitterness, and out of that bitterness becomes murder. Another story in the book of the Bible, in the book of Genesis, is later, there's a man named Jacob. And Jacob has sons. One of the sons is a man named Joseph. And Jacob liked Joseph a little more than his other brothers, which is problems to begin with, right? A little bit of favoritism. But he gives his Joseph a special coat to wear. And then it goes on and it says that his brothers were envious of him. They didn't want the coat. They weren't looking and saying, oh, I really want that coat. What did they want instead? They wanted the status. They wanted the feeling of being like Joseph because Joseph had that special thing. And so that's what envy does. And so what do they do to their brother? They sell him off into slavery. They try and kill him. And so you see how envy leads to this hatred, leads to murder. But envy isn't so much just wanting what the others have. Envy is about wanting the status, wanting the image, wanting the accolades that it provides. So if I see another preacher and I see them preaching really well, envy isn't just simply saying, wow, I wish I could preach like that, because there's nothing wrong with aspiring to be better at something. But envy says, if I can't be as good as them, I don't want them to. And so envy then can lead to, oh, trying to bring them down a step. Envy then leads to the saying, well, yeah, he might be a really good preacher, but did you hear this about him? And you see, that's how envy works. Envy looks and doesn't just say, I want that car that the other person has, and I'm going to work hard for it, but if I can't have that car, then I don't want them to have it. And so there's a folk tale told of what envy looks like in this. This fairy comes to this farmer and says, he says, I'm going to grant you a wish. I'm going to give you whatever it is you want. He says, but whatever I give you, your neighbor over there is going to get twice what I give to you. And this farmer was filled with envy. This farmer couldn't stand his neighbor, and so he thought for a long while about it. He thought, wow, if I ask for 3 cows, he's going to get 6. If I ask for my field to produce 100 bushels, he's going to get 200 bushels. So finally, the farmer thinks for a moment, and then he looks at the fairy, and he says, what I want is to be blind in one eye. And so it's this sense of saying, I don't want any others to see. See, that's where envy is. It can't stand the success of others. It wants to bring others down. And when somebody else has something, it's not just wanting it. It's wanting to take it away from them. And so we have these stories in the Bible, or we can take it to a modern story, a movie that came out a number of years ago called The Incredibles. Uh-huh. If you saw The Incredibles, so The Incredibles is a superhero, but it's a cartoon superhero movie. And in it, the villain called Incrediboy and then Sinestro sees the superheroes who have all these great powers. But Sinestro really doesn't have any great powers. And instead of just being thankful that these superheroes are around and they're saving people and doing these things, what Incrediboy then becomes Sinestro decides to do, he says, well, if I can't have that, then I'm going to take it away. So he develops this evil plot and he begins actually killing all the superheroes. And then to make himself a superhero. That's the nature of envy. Envy looks and says, I don't want you to have that because what you have is somehow bringing me down. What you have is somehow taking away from me. You can imagine just a simple story like this. Imagine children, if you've had children, you know what this goes like sometimes where rules change over time for kids, don't they? You know, when you have that first child, there's all the rules and our tendency as parents is sometimes they're a little bit different. And the older child often thinks that the rules for the younger children, what, are easier, right? Oh, you're so easy on the younger child, right? And so now imagine we have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. And the 18-year-old hears that the 16-year-old has an 11:30 curfew when he only had an 11 o'clock curfew. Now, does the 18-year-old really lose anything by the 16-year-old getting an 11:30 curfew? No, but what will the 18-year-old do? He's envious. He can't get that. But what he will do anything to stop that from happening. He will do what he is. And that's the nature of envy. And so this is what envy looks like. And this is why the Bible talks about it. And it's not so much that sometimes what we are envious of is a good thing. We may be envious of somebody's gifts. of somebody's talents. We may see the way someone sews or the way someone cooks, the way someone speaks, the way they sing. We may see those things and we may desire those things. And there's nothing wrong with desiring good things. But when it becomes envy is when it turns to saying, if I can't have it, then I don't want them to have it either. That's what envy does. Envy says they have that thing, and because of that, they're looked at better. They're looked at as more. And so then what we want to do is we want to take them down. We see that person who gets the part in the play that we've been wanting, and we become envious, and so then we begin and gather our friends together and start gossiping about other things about them. Because we can't have what they have, so what we want to do is bring them down. And that's the nature of envy, and that's how it becomes one of these capital or root vices, because out of this comes all these other things. It becomes malice and anger and slander, and we've seen murder. And what we see in its sense is envy is opposed to love. Envy is opposed to love because love is what? Love is desiring the best for somebody else. When Jesus answers and says, the two key things are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. When we love our neighbor, we want what's best for our neighbor. We see somebody else and I want what's good for you. Envy is the opposite of that, because envy is one of those things that there is nothing. It's purely destructive. I mean, envy doesn't even make you feel good. I mean, some of the other sins and vices, at least you might think, well, at least it makes me feel good for a little while. Envy has no good feeling in it. It's just pure anger, rage at what somebody else has. And so what do we begin to do with this thing? Is one of the first things we need to do is identify where envy exists in your life and then confess it. So how do you know if you suffer from envy? One way is when you see someone else complimented, or when you hear someone else get complimented, what's your response to that? And what we discover often is the things we're envious of are the things that are most like who we are, and it's often the people that are closest to us that where envy tends to take root. So, for example, if somebody compliments someone else on being a really great cook, I don't tend to generally get envious of that because I have no desire to cook. That's not something that but now, if I'm standing with somebody else, and this is where it takes place. So I'm sitting with someone from church, and this happens quite often. Confession time for me here. So people come forward, and they're saying, like, oh, I really like that pastor. He's such a good preacher. And I think, wait a minute. Am I not? And then, but envy, what envy would look like then is would say, well, yeah, but it's not willing to take the compliment for someone else. So do you have envy in your life? Are you bothered when someone else succeeds? Does it really irk you when that other person in your workplace who you think is not as competent as you are, who you think is not as smart as you, who not think as talented as you, when they get the promotion or when they get the award? When you're in school and that other person gets picked to be the captain of the team when you think you should have, do you get bothered by those kinds of things? And then when that happens, do you start to look down on them? Do you find yourself finding ways to gather people around you and gossiping about them? Mm. The kind of backbiting and slandering, ways to bring them down. Do you maybe find yourself talking behind their back? Do you initiate or collect or tell gossip? Do you foster or organize antagonism against them? Do you scorn their abilities? Do you tease or bully them, ridicule them? And so this is what envy looks like. And so one of the first things we need to do is say, is there envy in my life? Where is it happening in my life? Where do I see these things? Where do I see someone else who has something, who's successful at something? And where does it begin to irk me? And where do I find myself wanting to just bring them down? To not rejoice in what they have. We see this, I said we can also diagnose culture with it. And think about the way culture works is, if you go to the grocery store, and in the grocery store there are all these magazines at the checkout, right? And there's kind of two kinds of magazines there. And one of the kinds of magazines is these things about all the things like, oh, did you see how much weight this person put on? Or how about, Why do you think it is that people want to buy those kinds of magazines to read about how, you know, some star is getting divorced or how they've lost all their money or all the weight they put on or how bad they look 5 years later? In some sense, it's a sign of envy going on in our culture. The Germans have a word for it called Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude is joy at another's sorrow. It's this feeling that you're glad when someone else is brought down to size. And I think in part why these kinds of magazines and why these things are so popular, why we love to see people in leadership fall, and not everybody does, and I'm not saying you all do, but why there's this thing, and why do the magazines like that sell? Because in some sense, it's a sign of envy within our culture, because we like to see the heroes brought down, and we like to see them as like on our level. We don't want to see somebody being above us. We want everybody to be at our level or below. And so we enjoy seeing it when somebody else puts on a little bit extra weight, or when somebody else loses all their money, or when somebody else's wife walks out of them, because it makes us feel good in some twisted way. And that's a sign of envy going on in our culture. So how do we begin to overcome that? If we are honest with ourselves and we go with God and we begin to look at ourselves and we find envy going on, what do we do to begin to overcome it? And so you might wonder, we read earlier this passage from the book, Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus preaches in what's called the Beatitudes. And it's really kind of this upside-down look at the world. And Jesus starts by saying, he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the meek. And he says that there's these blessings to the people that we don't expect. And what we'll be doing in part over the next 7 weeks is looking at them, some of these blessings and how they invert those things and how they reflect an opposite of these capital vices or of these deadly sins. And so the one we want to think about today is this: blessed are those who mourn. And you think, well, what's the connection between envy and between mourning? Envy and mourning are both responses to something we lack. Mourning is often a response to something we lack. And both those who envy and those who mourn are in positions of want. They desire a different kind of life. But those who mourn simply are in some sense saying, this is the way it is. They don't desire to go after it. But more than anything else, those who mourn expose their pain. They confess it and they allow others to heal it. They open themselves up to receive help. In those spaces, there is healing. Mourning is not a place devoid of life. And so there's a different response to when we lack something. It's a mourning, but it's also a way of saying, I don't have this, and doing that. And then it's also mourning, and then we can also rejoice. And the scripture also talks about rejoicing with those who rejoice. But mourning is a response, the proper response when we don't have something, to say, I simply don't have that. But beyond that, things we can do. We can practice generosity and gratitude. Practice generosity and gratitude. And generosity is a way of giving away things, and it's saying that I'm not defined by the things I have. And gratitude is a way of saying I'm thankful for what I have. And so one way to think of it is to realize that as we look around within a church, there are all kinds of different talents, there are all kinds of different gifts. We realize that everybody has a part to play. And gratitude is thankful for the gifts of others. And so one way we can practice that gratitude is complimenting other people. You know, if you're battling envy, if you're battling this sin of envy that's taking root in your life, just begin to just compliment someone. When you see somebody who's done something well, offer them a compliment. And a compliment without a but at the end of it. You know, like, oh, that was really good, but, you know, maybe tell somebody else about their good things. Say, did you know I was listening to this other pastor, and that pastor was such a good preacher? And I really admired that. I was over there, and I watched the way that guy was playing on the baseball field, and he was just really good at that. My coworker, you should have seen, he gave a presentation the other day. It was just amazing. And as we begin to practice that, and then we begin to just be thankful for what we have, because gratitude is the antidote to so many things, because as we are thankful for things, we recognize that all that we have is a gift from God. And so we see these stories like we saw with Cain and Abel and with Joseph, and we recognize that sometimes life doesn't deal us all the same set of cards, does it? We all have been given different gifts. And gratitude simply says, I'm thankful for what I have because everything comes from a God. It's not resentful of what others have, but it's being thankful for what they've been given. And so we begin to battle envy in that way. And the last way we can battle envy is to find our identity in Christ. Because what happens is, in envy, is we think that whatever it is the other person has is giving them their status. Whatever the other person has is giving them their purpose. And we look at the talent that they have, the money that they have, the house that they have, and we see those things and we think, oh, if I only had that, then I would be content. And if they can't have it, I don't want them to have it either. If I can't have it, then I want it taken away from them. But instead, if we find and realize that our identity, that our worth, our purpose, everything is found in Jesus and in Jesus alone, it begins to root out that envy. Because I don't look and say, well, that person has that thing and I want that, and if I can't have it, then I don't want them to have it. It's to recognize that I have all that I need in Jesus. Everything I have is in Jesus, and that's all that I need. I don't need anything else. I don't need anything beyond that. But I can be content in who I am in Jesus. So envy is the green monster. It's that narrow-eyed thing that looks at what others have and longs to bring them down. It looks at what they have and it longs to destroy them. It's bothered so much that what they have brings them up. But we can counter that by celebrating what others have, by recognizing that what they have comes from God, and that all that we have is a gift from God, and that our identity isn't found in all those other things, but it's found in Jesus alone. So we can battle this vice. We can begin to root it out and kill this, and then in the end, all the other things that follow from it. And so my prayer for you, my prayer for myself this week, is that you would begin to root out that envy in your life. That you would begin to find an attitude that expresses joy and generosity and gratitude. That you would begin to find that your identity is in Jesus and Jesus alone, and that nothing else is necessary for you to have worth and to have value.